I had to go down to the Roseburg on Saturday night for a thing.
Call the Water and Environment Committee to order. Thank you for coming this morning. This morning we'll be doing a work hearing, possible work session on 2180. And we'll have an informational meeting on drinking water and the audits done by the Secretary of State. So I'd like to call forward George Buckner, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, on House Bill 2180.
We're doing this first.
Welcome.
Good morning, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. I'm George Buckner. I'm the Wildlife Division Director, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. Now, I understand that Roy was here Friday and made a statement on this particular bill, and there were some questions that came up. I think what I'll do is give you a brief rundown. I think there was confusion over two different contracts that we have with Wildlife Services. One of those contracts is the one in question, which 2180 addresses. It's the contract we have to fulfill the obligations of 610020, and under that, we're to provide not more than $40,000 annually to fund that particular requirement. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has determined that our funding of this particular statute violates federal aid laws and puts our funds in diversion, and they have notified us that if we continue to fund this with license and tag revenue, that we will be in default of our federal aid funding and stand to lose many millions of dollars annually. The other contract we have with Wildlife Services is for control of damage by black bear, cougar, and fur bears, primarily beaver. That's for $90,000 per biennium. And that contract is not in question because we do have management authority over all the species listed in that contract. I think I'll stop there. And
Mr. Buckner, you probably need to go over that Fish and Wildlife a little more thoroughly. You said it violates certain...
Yeah, I wish Roy was here this morning. Roy has most of my information on that, but yes, there is according to federal aid rules, anytime a state agency diverts any of their license and tag monies to management of species or to any programs under which they do not have management authority, they're in diversion. And what they do, this is a 1936 law that was set up to protect fish and wildlife agencies from having their funding diverted to other sources for which they did not have management authority.
So you're saying that you don't have authority over the species that are covered?
Under 610020, we do not have management authority over those species.
And which species are those exactly?
Those are predatory animal is defined as coyotes, rabbits, rodents, and birds other than birds that we determine need protection.
Van Jensen.
You said you, thank you, Madam Chair. Roy, you said you did not have management authority over them. Where does the management authority come from?
Madam Chair, Representative Jensen, management authority is assigned to the Department of Agriculture according to these statutes, from what I can understand.
Okay, so coyotes, etc., from here, are the management authority is with the Department of Agriculture?
That's correct.
Okay. That was the point I was getting.
Madam Chair, Representative Morgan.
What I'm trying to do is get a kind of a picture of how much money we've been putting into this fund in the past. Can you kind of recap maybe for the last five biennium how much money we've been taking from the tag and license fees and putting into this fund?
Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, It's $40,000 annually.
It just has flat been $40,000? Okay. And then the other question I had, if I may, Madam
Sure.
Chair, if licenses and tags are off limits for us as a source of revenue, obviously there's general fund revenue that's available, but what other sources of revenue within the department are available to fund this program?
Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, to my knowledge, general fund would be the only funds available to us. Our other two sources of funds are either license and tag revenue or actual federal aid funds, and both of those two would be off limits.
What, petition endowments?
Well, no.
Thank you. Representative Cruz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Would it be possible, because I know ODA has the authority for these predatory animals, would it be possible to rule for ODFNW to assume the authority and direct the Department of Ag to implement a program, or would that still be a diversion if that happened?
Madam Chair, Representative Cruz, I assume that if our agency was giving management authority for coyotes, then it would be appropriate for us to spend license and tag money on coyote control. But there are other funds other than the ones that we provide that go into the control of coyotes in Oregon. So that would affect the Department of Ag in some way, but I'm not sure I could speak to that.
A follow-up? I guess the real issue, maybe not necessarily on this particular thing, is if you gave another agency the actual, you had the authority and transferred that authority, would that be considered a diversion at that point?
Madam Chair, Representative Cruz, from what I understand the federal law, it would be.
It would be. Okay. Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In light of the fact that this House side of this body passed a bill, I think, last week having to do with feral pigs, swine or whatever, which comes under this statute, how's this going to fit in then?
Madam Chair, Representative Jensen, that's going to create a dilemma for us. At this point, I'm not sure where we're going with that one, because feral pigs do not even fall under the definition of wildlife at this point in time. So there are some statutes that are going to have to be changed here if we're going to assume this responsibility. It also makes us responsible then for an animal that was once domestic, which falls outside the realm of our former responsibilities also.
Are there further questions for Mr. Buckner? Well, this really clarifies this bill. I guess we thought this was more of a funding bill. We didn't realize this was a change of authority bill. So,
Madam Chair, this is a funding bill. This is not a change of authority here. We're not asking for anything but a funding switch here from license and tag revenue to general fund.
But does that not then give you extended authority?
No, it does not.
It does not. Okay.
Madam Chair, may I ask another question?
Representative Morgan.
If the department has been putting $40,000 every year into the fund, why is the language in the bill says an amount not to exceed $40,000?
Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, that is the language that is in the current legislation in the book. It says an amount not to exceed $40,000.
Would it be, would it not clarify matters if the bill was amended to read that the budget transfer will be $40,000?
Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, I think when Legislative Council wrote this, they left out part of the language. I think the language says not more than 3%, not to exceed $40,000, so I think the way the former language was written, it would just basically be $40,000, but when they rewrote this, they left that part of it out. So it looks to me like now there would be some question as to how much money up to $40,000 we would be either required or authorized to put in. So I think that question came up last week.
Madam Chair, there, when we heard this bill last week, the issue was raised that essentially this gives the department the latitude to put $1 in this fund.
Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, I think that's correct the way it's written at this point. If I can find this exact language. I'm not coming across the exact language, but there was something related. Oh, here it is. Shall the Fish and Wildlife Commission shall set aside 3% in a budget fund known as a Predatory Animal, Rabbit, and Rodent Control Fund. The amount set aside should not exceed $40,000. The 3% part was left out when they rewrote this piece of legislation.
Mm-hmm. Did you request that?
No, we did not.
Okay.
And we didn't catch it either, that had been left out until last week.
So would it be appropriate for us to request an amendment to replace that language?
Madam Chair, that would not be out of line of what our past commitment to this bill has been.
Okay. Representative Cruz.
Well, if the commitment is $40,000, why not just say $40,000?
Representative Close, Madam Chair, Representative Cruz, that's fine with us.
And Madam Chair, I think it would be better just to clearly say that there will be $40,000, and that is a cap. That's a higher limit and a lower limit all at the same time, and I think it's more direct and makes more sense to me.
Madam Chair, concerns about limiting this to the general fund. We've had testimony that there are no other funds within the agency to use for this besides the general fund and the hunting and license fees, or the hunting and fishing license fees. But what may be another option for the committee to consider here is just taking out the explicit direction to use general fund money and instead introduce some kind of concept that allows them to use any eligible funds within the agency.
Mr. Buckner, would that be workable for your agency? Any?
Madam Chair, I think it would be.
What was the word again? Any?
Any eligible funds?
Eligible funds. And that wouldn't be a problem with the putting funds in diversion?
I think that wording would work, because that if we were to just use eligible funds, then it would be our general fund monies.
Okay. Representative Monica Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question regarding the $40,000. Are there years where you do not use $40,000?
Madam Chair, Representative Monica Anderson. No, that money is transferred to Wildlife Services annually, and they do use all those funds.
Representative
Cruz.
Yeah. Follow up on that. I mean, this is the funding stream that the counties use to operate the program, so it is all allocated. I guess my question was, I mean, we are deleting reference to the wildlife fund. Is there a way, and because of the licenses section of that, is the wildlife fund categorized enough to where we could still reference that if we eliminated the reference to licenses in there, or is that as one pot of money untouchable in this aspect?
Madam Chair, Representative Cruz, We're going to be restricted to using our general fund side of the budget, no matter what we do in funding this, if I follow your question.
Okay.
Madam Chair,
Representative Morris.
Why are the fines, gifts, and otherwise that are mentioned in here off limits to this fund?
Madam Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, I'm not certain. I do know that some of the fines we have are tied to some of the federal programs that we have, but I couldn't clearly explain that. Those two categories of our funding are fairly limited anyway.
Madam Chair, perhaps we could get around this by just specifying any eligible funds within the agency.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, do we need legislative fiscal to explain any of this to us?
I don't.
Okay. This will go to Ways and Means eventually. So.
Well, let's go ahead and request the language changes from Legislative Council and recycle it one more time.
Okay. Is that
I'm just wondering, Madam Chair, it doesn't necessarily have to go to Ways and Means. It's below the $50,000 amount that makes it mandatory.
It's $80,000.
By any means.
Yeah, the 80.
Okay. I stand corrected. Thank you.
Okay. I think what we'll do is we'll direct our staff to put in that amendment, and perhaps you could work with Megan on the wording of it. Just put it into Legislative Council to make it clear that it will be general fund or any eligible fund.
Also, Madam Chair, if we might make it a straight $40,000.
Yes.
Okay.
Movement into that fund.
Okay. Instead of not exceeding, it will.
Right.
No. Instead of not to exceed.
Okay. Remove not to exceed.
Madam Chair.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before we finally pass all of these out, I'd like to ask the department, and maybe we need to have LC look at the issue of how our new pigs are going to fit into this equation and get that clarified.
Okay. We'll throw the pigs in too.
Madam Chair, just on that, as I understand the oversights that happened on the House side as far as definition is going to be taken up on the Senate side to make sure that feral pigs are considered to be wild animals. So that's a technical thing that will happen on the Senate side.
Okay.
Okay,
thank you very much. Is there anyone else that wanted to testify on this House Bill 2180?
Good morning, Madam Chair. Richard Prosasen with the Oregon Sheep Growers Association. The only thing that I would point out with the way I believe the committee would propose to construct this bill is that it would set a firm number at $40,000 per year. For reference, I think that $40,000 cap has been in statute since about 1959. So to me, in terms of, and specifically in light of the depredation that livestock producers face around the state, that I think is a relatively low number. Across the board, if one were to look at the agencies or the coordinated program, it's probably less than 5% of the total program receipts. If it would be possible to set that as a floor rather than a ceiling and allow some flexibility, I think that would be a lot better, more suitable. Thank you.
Madam Chair,
Representative,
I'm going to be very open to changing the language to say at least $40,000.
Okay.
Yeah.
How does the committee feel about that? Representative Monica.
My only concern would be, what would that take away, or I guess it would be up to the authority to determine if they would have money to take away from something else to put into the...
Madam Chair,
mm-hmm.
It would be up to the Ways and Means side to figure out how the budget would finally work.
This would give them flexibility.
Yeah.
To go above.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Representative Hatt.
My concern would be at some point I'd want this to be more of a user fee, in which it, as opposed to general fund subsidy.
Well,
it improves.
Yeah. It already is at the county level. This is just the state's contribution to a thing that rolls in federal funds, county funds, private country. I mean, there's a whole mix in here, and this is a very small portion of of the money that goes towards that, so.
Just so the committee knows, the testimony we had last week was that USDA puts in $122,000, ODA puts in $225,000, ODF&W $85,000, the county's put in $598,000, and individuals $155,000, so it's $2.2 million about. So this is just a small piece of the puzzle. Okay, so is it the wish of the committee to include the words at least 40,000 in this amendment? Is that acceptable, Mr. Buckner? Is that acceptable? Okay, we will do so.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Okay, I'm going to close the hearing on House Bill 2180. And we're going to open an informational meeting on the drinking water program audit. John Latimer of the Secretary of State.
Madam Chair, good morning. For the record, I'm John Latimer, Director of the Secretary of State Audits Division. I think you should have in front of you an audit entitled Department of Human Services, Oregon Health Division Drinking Water Program.
No.
It's in their office. All right.
They were delivered to your office on Friday. Do we need a couple more?
Some of us haven't been to our office.
Okay. Well, let me summarize then, and
thank you.
And the audit, as both a summary in the beginning, and then each of the things I'll talk about are discussed in detail back in the. I think that I want to make it very clear at the outset, this is not an audit of water systems. This is an audit of the management of the water quality program by the Division of Health and the Department of Human Services. So, and I think that when I've had calls from reporters who wanted to know about their water system, I had to try and make that clear. This is not an audit of the water systems themselves. We did do some testing. We did a random sample of water system just to test the health division's management of their water quality program. The health division tells us also that the problems we found are by and large limited to small water systems. And they have said that we can't attest to that because we didn't, unfortunately in our sample, we did not pick up any of the large water systems in Oregon, Portland, Salem, Eugene, et cetera. And so,
Representative Jensen, excuse me.
How did you draw your sample then?
It was a random sample.
It might have been better to have done a stratified.
It might have been. In fact, it would have been. But my point at the beginning is this was not an attempt to audit the water systems. We were just looking at the health division's management of the program. And we think that you'll see in some of our recommendations, there are some things that we think both the health division and the legislature could do to improve the program. Okay. There is, we think, a critical weakness in the system. And that is that under the law, the water systems, except the large ones that have their own testing capability, the water systems that use outside laboratories are not required to report those systems, or the laboratories are not required to report their results to the Division of Health. The system itself is required to report the results. And what we found was they weren't always reporting to the Health Division bad results. They would wait until they got a good result and to report it to the Health Division. And that created problems, as we note in the audit, and I'll talk about a few of those as we go along. The important point, though, is that the water system itself can control the reporting process to the Division of Health. One of the recommendations that we make in the report is that that law be changed to require the water the labs that do the testing to report directly to the Health Division.
Madam Chair?
Representative Jensen?
Is there any kind of a legislation in or proposed on that at this time?
It's my understanding there is a bill being drafted.
Madam Chair?
We could also...
Yeah.
Committee. Representative Moss?
Yes, the representative from Beaverton is submitting it, and it's in LC right now, and I have a statement from them of what the wording would be.
And
should I go ahead?
Dennis, would it be?
Charlie Ringo.
Okay. Let's let them give their report of the audit first.
Okay. Madam Chair, we say in our audit report that we feel that the division should improve its enforcement of the reporting requirements. Because as we found, a lot of the chemical tests and the tests for non-chemical contaminants were not being reported to the Health Division. Further, that the division was not using all the procedures that it has under its own rules to respond to violations of drinking water. The division was not taking proper action with what they call SNCs, or severe recurring violators of water quality. What we found in the audit was the division was aware that 7 of these systems had not corrected violations that they did know about. And so there was this continuing problem of lack of reporting, lack of follow-up that could put people's health in jeopardy. In addition, the division was not always writing violation notices to the system, and we felt that the way the division manages the labs that do the independent laboratories that do many of the tests could be improved also. What the division does is they certify independent labs to do certain kinds of tests, and there are some very complicated tests of water quality, both chemical and other kinds of contaminants. And the laboratories have to be certified to be able to do those tests, not only do the tests, but do the tests in the proper way. And what we found was that one laboratory was not certified to perform work in Oregon. 11 systems used labs that had not obtained approval for the tests that they were running. And 15 systems used labs that tested for one or more chemical contaminants using unapproved methodologies. The point here is, though, that the division was not monitoring these labs once they were set up. That's the summary of what we found, and again, I want to reiterate, we were not auditing the systems, we were auditing the Division of Health. So I'll be glad to try and answer any questions.
Representative Morgan.
You have some spreadsheets in the back at your exhibits, and one of the interesting things when looking through this was that it appears that certain systems have the problems, and is it fair to assume that there are a large number of systems that have no problems and a small number of systems that have recurring problems?
Actually, with the small sample that we took, I don't think we could come to any conclusion with that regard. Again, we're looking at the management of the process by the division, not the water systems themselves.
The question would probably be better answered than by the division themselves. Thank you.
Committee, she is referring to pages 29, 30, 31 in your book. Representative Lee.
Yes, I find great concern with the audit from the viewpoint that because there isn't any reference as to which systems these are, where the problems are either geographically by number or something more complete, that it appears that all of the water systems have major problems, and I know that those in the Clackamas area have taken great care to do everything that was required by law, so I'm wondering how we get past this, the media beating up on the good systems as well as the bad systems, if, what kind of responses you've been able to provide to the media that might reflect that.
Representative Lee, Madam Chair, Representative Lee, what we've tried to, when we've talked to the media, we've tried to get them to understand that, again, this was not an audit of the systems. The incidents that we found were examples of the division's lack of supervision of water quality, not a blanket indictment of water systems across the state. We only looked at 100. And so I share your concern. I've raised this concern both with the division and with the press. I'm not sure, short of not of doing an audit that was so expensive that no one could afford it, mm-hmm. I'm not sure how we can audit the actions of state agencies and cover every kind of issue. I'm very concerned about the issue you raised, though, and we've tried to get the press to understand what the audit was about.
May I follow up, Madam Chair? Thank you. 100 systems out of how many systems were audited?
I don't know the answer to that question, Madam Chair, Representative Lee.
Thank you. Probably the division does.
On your table, mm-hmm. I believe it says a total of 3,617. Would that be the total? It adds up the community water systems, the transient, non-community, and the state regulated. It's on page 29.
Right. It would appear there, Madam Chair, Representative Lear, 3,600 systems.
Thank you.
But again, I have to reiterate, this was not an audit of water systems. It was an audit of the division to see how they apply their standards and their management of the water quality program.
Further questions? Representative King.
I would imagine that the division has to report to or receive some oversight from EPA regarding the Clean Water Act. Are we in jeopardy of failing any scrutiny, losing funds, and having any other repercussions?
Madam Chair, Representative King, I think the division would have to answer the question of the, how much in jeopardy they are on losing federal dollars. What we did find was that the test, the state requires water systems to test volatile and synthetic organic chemicals less frequently than required by federal rules. I think the division would need to answer that question, Representative King.
We'll let them do that. Thanks.
Just a comment, Madam Chair. Knowing the media like I do, I'm just amazed that they would be interested in something as dull as water systems. I'm curious about that.
Easy.
You'll rip it up in the story.
Madam Chair, Representative Haas, I think they also drink water.
Madam Chair,
and
just to follow up on, I didn't have a chance to read all of what Representative Ringo's office gave me this morning, actually 5 minutes before I came in to committee meeting. But basically what the Legislative Council, what has been submitted to Legislative Council has to do with requiring the laboratories to report all tests directly to both the division and water system operators. And there may be more to it, but I'm afraid I didn't have time to get any more information.
We will look forward to what bills cover this as they come through the line. If there are no further questions, thank you very much.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you.
Okay, I'll call forward Doug Weiss, who is chair of the State Drinking Water Advisory Committee. And Mr. Bradley, did you want to come with him as well?
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Doug Wise. I work for the Eugene Water and Electric Board after a couple of decades, and I represent the chair of the Drinking Water Advisory Committee. That's my role and has been for several years. To give you some historical information, initially about 26 years ago, the Safe Drinking Water Act was implemented. And at that time, the Oregon Health Division had about 25 FTE available to them to work on implementing safe drinking water rules. Since then, we've had the 1974, 1986, 1996 amendments. From a water utility perspective, I can tell you that our budget for water quality has gone up over 8 times, even corrected for the cost of living. I can also share with you that our FTE count, our labor hours devoted to water quality, has gone up more than 5 times. As we sit today, the current Oregon Health Division program sits at about 24 and a half FTE. So their level of effort has remained the same over the time, even though we have a new set of regulations and 2 sets of amendments. Now, we've handled about 14 different regulations over the last 10 years, and in the next 5 years, there will be another 14 sets of regulations coming from the federal government, which the state will implement as an agent of primacy with flat-level staff. Faced with that dilemma, the state has assembled a board of 14 to 16 individuals from around the state, the Drinking Water Advisory Committee, to help prioritize the work that they are asked to do by not only the federal government, but by the state government and by their own rules. And we have spent an enormous amount of time doing that review and prioritization of those as a committee. And 2 things are really surprising to me, in that we have a state agency that asks questions and asks for work, not just ideas and input, and then they take the information that they've asked for and they apply it. So although we don't set the policy, we don't set the rules, we set the priorities for the agency to move forward with in implementation. If I speak in round numbers of around 65 different regulations or rules that they have to comply with, comport with, to meet all of their mandates, and we rank those from the top to the bottom. Is the water safe? Does someone's house get tested when they sell it? Does their well get tested? Those are the ranges of questions that we take, and we simply move down the list and recommend they move down the list until they run out of resource, which, not too surprising, is someplace between 30 and 50 of those 65 to 70 items.
Could I interrupt for just a second?
Ma'am.
The 65 different rules, are these mostly federal guidelines or state?
They are federal guidelines. They are state legislative actions, and they're also Oregon Health Division system rules. For example, laboratory certification is one. And we're in flux now in certified laboratories because there is we have one agent in the state who certifies all of the laboratories in the state, and that person is simply unable to do all of the work, and so they contract part of that work out. That's one example of the 5 or 6 dozen different rules that they administer. But the point I'd like to make is that the Drinking Water Advisory Committee is not just a focus group. It is, in fact, an active acting board that sets the priorities that then Dave Leland and his staff try to administer. And they've done that, again, without an increase in resource or staffing for a long, long time. There is always federal money on the table that goes begging because there is no match from the state. For example, in this biennium, my belief is that the state had an additional match of $550,000 that Oregon could capture about $900,000 from the federal government program that we are now do not have access to. And those kinds of scrambling for match activities are a constant part of the Oregon Health Division's life. Fortunately, the Drinking Water Advisory Committee, we just get the reports. We don't have to do the scrambling. But it's really apparent that with, instead of 25 staff, we had 30 or 35 staff doing these tasks, that we could move much farther down the list. And so one solution is, of course, to get the lab directed forward, and that's a good call. But there are other things that also could be done with an additional level of funding for the Oregon Health Division. It turns out that over time...
Representative Morgan has a question.
The activities that ensure safe drinking water in the state, are they, is it the Environmental Protection Agency that oversees that program here in Oregon?
Chair Close, Senator Morgan. Yes, it is. However, in 1987, this body voted to accept primacy, which means that the state has primary responsibility for enforcing all federal regulations. The regulations must be equal to or more stringent than federal requirements, and therefore we need to adopt all the federal rules in language that makes sense to water system operators as well as health department officials.
May I have a follow-up? Oh, I'm sure. So is it safe then to say that if Oregon's regulations drop below the federal regulation level, that the EPA would step in?
Chair Representative Morgan. Yes, there was a simultaneous audit by the Region 10 U.S. EPA of the Oregon Health Division, and there were some few exceptions noted in program implementation. And the step-in is would be a dramatic step for the EPA. My view is that they would, in fact, encourage Oregon to get more funding to carry out the program a little more fully and say, by the way, we've got a lot of money here if you can just match it. And they've continued to do that. They are not interested in administering the program in state, and in fact have actively encouraged most states to administer their own program. The State Revolving Loan Fund, which will set aside over its 7-year period about $75 or $80 million for communities to improve their water systems, actually further encourages states to take that initiative.
I have one more.
Go ahead.
So the EPA then is aware of, or it sounds to me like the Oregon Health Plan for Water, where you draw the line on the list of the services that you'll cover. The EPA is aware of that program and has no objection to it?
Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, we work very closely with the EPA and check in on every decision that is made by the Oregon Health Division through the Drinking Water Advisory Committee. And they have concerns. They are aware, but it's kind of, it would be more like parking tickets instead of felony.
But thank you.
Could you tell me, just to clarify, when was this Region 10 simultaneous review done?
I believe it was done late spring, early summer.
Of 2000.
June of 2000.
June of 2000. Thank you. Representative Lee.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. If the $550,000 were available, what kinds of programs would be captured in the $900,000 matching funds that the feds might provide?
Madam Chair, I don't know exactly which programs, and I will let you address the Oregon Health Division for the program elements of that. However, in the overall biennial budget, it represents roughly 10 FTE, which would increase their capacity by 50%, 40% perhaps.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Ma'am Morgan.
But we often find that when we accept matching funds from the federal government, that they're earmarked for very specific programs. So is it a fair statement to say that if we somehow were able to get these matching funds, that we have no guarantee that we would be able to apply them to where we see the priorities of being?
Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, thank you for asking that. It turns out that the State Revolving Loan Fund actually allows program administration to be used to be funded with those additional funds. And program administration is exactly what we need.
Thank you. Further questions?
Yes.
Representative King.
So your department does have some packages for ways and means that would address this. I also wanted to follow up on that. I see on page 19 of the report, as of February 2000, how 746 community water systems required have a sanitary system. Only 102 have received one in the last sanitary survey. Only 102 have received one in the past 5 years. And it goes on to say the majority of the division's resources have gone to ensuring statewide compliance with lead and copper testing. So it sounds like your department's not doing the job because you don't have the resources to meet all its mandates. And if that's the case, then that is related to seeing the budget packages for ways and means to be able to get you guys to be funded to do the job of your mandates. I want to see if your funding is equal to your mandates.
We will have the department respond to that when we have them forward. What is your opinion of the size of this sample, 100 systems out of over about 3,600? How do you view that as an advisory committee? Is that a fair sample?
Go ahead. I think the sample is small. However, to extend the sample to a reasonable 30% or a 20% look at the water systems might be prohibitively expensive. I do believe that they physically went to the laboratories and reviewed data, and there are a fewer number of laboratories than you might expect that are certified for these criteria in the state. So actually physically going to a laboratory, running through the data of several hundred systems is doable in a pragmatic sense, but would be quite time expensive. In addition,
I guess what I'm asking is that a fair, to take data from that size of sample, is that a fair, can you make assumptions based on
that? Madam Chair, it would depend on which labs they checked, from my personal and professional view, because I believe that some labs are much more comprehensive and effective and deal with certain segments, and other labs are less, don't deal with other segments. So it would depend on the labs that were selected.
And in your professional opinion, if you did include Portland, Eugene, and Salem, would you expect there to be any differences in the data?
Madam Chair, the larger utilities, most of the medium utilities, and in fact all utilities, want to be off the SNCC list. Nobody wants unsafe water treated delivered to their community. And I think that the larger systems, by and large, would lift the sample size so that there would be fewer violations noted rather than many.
Seeing no further questions, thank you very much. Did you wish to present?
Only just quickly, I guess, Madam Chair. My name is Dan Bradley. I'm the general manager of the South Fork Water Board, which is a joint water treatment facility in Oregon City and West Lynn. I've been on the Drinking Water Advisory Committee representing two different groups, the American Water Works Association and presently is the League of Oregon Cities since on and off since about 1988. Representative Hess says that we're sort of a boring industry. Tends to be true. We tend to, the silent industry we refer to ourselves, our personal lives aren't very exciting either.
Mm.
But I think that in terms of the Drinking Water Advisory Committee, one of the strongest things we've pursued is education and training above enforcement. And I think the department's done, this section has done an excellent job in doing that, in reaching out primarily to the smaller systems, even some of the medium-sized and the larger systems go beyond what federal requirements are by a long ways. No matter what, federal requirements are in place for all the drinking water suppliers. And I think if anything that the Drinking Water Advisory Committee would be at fault for is pushing more for education and training so that people understand why providing safe drinking water is important as opposed to what would happen if they don't. And I think Dave and his staff have been superb in that. With my League of Oregon Cities hat on, I think, and hearing what's in Representative Ringo's bill, we probably wouldn't have any concern with the direct lab reporting as long as the supplier knew it first. We want to be able to take care of our own house before any regulatory agency comes in. So So I think that would be all I'd have to add, and I'd be free to, or happy to answer any questions you may have.
Questions? Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, Tom Johnson, Oregon State Health Division. We're going to give you the last word, Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Tom Johnson, Oregon Health Division. We appreciate this opportunity to come and provide information. I'm an assistant administrator for the Oregon Health Division of the Department of Human Services. I want to express appreciation for Secretary of State Bill Bradley and the state auditors for this recent audit of the drinking water program, which is within the division. We agree with the findings of the audit and appreciate the professional manner in which the audit was conducted. Oregon Health Division and drinking water providers work hard to ensure high-quality drinking water for the state. There have been no major cases of waterborne disease outbreaks in Oregon since 1992. However, we can do better. The recommendations made by the auditors are appropriate. For example, we agree with the mandatory test reporting by water laboratories to both the division and the water systems, and that this would provide a greater ability to identify potential water safety problems and address them early. For example, the mention in the audit of a finding of an E. coli sample is of great concern. Anytime E. coli is found in drinking water, this requires immediate action. In this case, the test results were not reported to us, and we were therefore not able to participate in the investigation of this E. coli finding. I want to emphasize, however, that drinking water systems in Oregon do a very good job. In Oregon, we have safe drinking water. The public can have confidence in that, and this drinking water meets federal standards. Most results are reported on time, and most reported test results show that the water is safe. Having said that, there are things that can be done to further reduce the risk of public health problems from drinking water. The risk is very low at present, but there are things that we can do to reduce it even further. We've already acted on many of the recommendations made by the audit within the limits of our resources, and we continue to provide effective oversight of public drinking water systems in Oregon. For example, we are in the process of implementing a new data system that will allow us to better track violations and to better follow up on these violations. We expect this new data system to be operational in June. Further, this current biennium, we significantly increased funds for local health departments to conduct sanitary surveys that was mentioned and to do follow-ups to respond to violations of drinking water standards and testing requirements. Regarding the use of enforcement powers mentioned in the audit, we continue to assure that the program follows priorities set in collaboration with the Drinking Water Advisory Committee, which you heard from the chair and a member, and also priorities which are consistent with those given to us by the Environmental Protection Agency. These priorities assure that we use resources that are available to us to the greatest effect in protecting the health of the public. If more resources were available, enforcement actions could be increased according to overall priorities. In light of federal audits, internal oversight of our operations, and in comparison with other state programs, we feel that our current staff and the staff of county public health departments are doing a very good job with the available resources. We appreciate this independent oversight and the recommendations which they've made, and we feel that they will help us and our program better meet its responsibilities. If I can answer any questions, I would be pleased to do so.
I have several. Where was the E. coli sample found? What locality?
Madam Chair, that was in Sublimity.
Madam Chair? And I have a couple follow-ups.
how you treat a problem like that? What will the Health Division do then?
Madam Chair, if we were made available of that information, which we were not in this case, we would right away send somebody out from our office, or if it is in a county where they have programs that would cover a drinking water system, we would send somebody from that county public health department to investigate that. That may be an on-site investigation. In this case, since it was E. coli, I expect that it clearly would, but there would be a follow-up to assure that safe drinking water was being provided.
Have you now sent someone to inspect that situation?
Madam Chair, we have sent a letter to Sublimity. They have responded. This was, of course, 6 years ago, and so the events around that sample are long since passed. They have responded to us by letter saying that they don't recall very well exactly what happened, but we've gone over the procedures with them, and they're clear about what they should do.
Okay, this was a study that looked at primarily or found problems in small water systems statewide. And you talk about your lack of resources. Can you tell me what percentage of your resources go to small water systems? If I were to look at a graph of where your resources go.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I don't know that we've broken it out that way. We treat all of them seriously. There are about, I think, 80% of our systems are small systems, so my guess is would be about 80% of resources would go to small systems.
Could you possibly verify that for us?
Surely we
can. Your statistics, and I'd like to see a breakdown of where your resources go, and particularly to the small water system.
Be happy to do that.
Representative Lee.
Yes, having been over in the Bend area for 12 years and a like amount here on the west side, I'm familiar with the small districts, especially private rural systems that are not even public bodies, not being well staffed or not having the tools to do this, and I think that's where our problems are. I'd really like to see the agency and the advisory committee give us some very explicit recommendations for maybe better regulations or process that those small systems would have to comply with, and perhaps what are their bonding requirements and whether or not those need to be extended further, because I've had some really bad personal experiences, and also friends and neighbors have in both this area, as you suggested, Sublimity, and also in the Deschutes area, the small private water users did not seem to be meeting the standards. Hopefully that's different now, but I think we have a continuing problem with the small private rural systems that really has to have a different approach.
Madam Chair, Representative Lee, if I could respond, I believe that that's true. The greatest number of violations that we find are in the smaller systems. One concern that we have, EPA is requiring more capacity in those particularly smaller systems, and that's going to be a workload increase on us. I think we've already heard testimony today about the resource problem that we have, and that's a real problem. My concern is further heightened by the fact that we do see in the future greater needs for our agency to provide the kind of support, encouragement, follow-up to develop those capacities in these small systems that Representative Lee is addressing. We simply cannot do that with the existing 24.5 FTE that we have now. Having said that, we support the governor's budget, which is before the legislature at present. That certainly is a judgment call with regard to adequacy of those resources. We support that and feel that those are adequate for this biennium, or more accurately, the biennium coming up that the budget addresses. However, beyond that, we must say that we have great concern with regard to the ability of our agency to provide that kind of oversight and support that Representative Lee is talking about, and in all honesty, EPA will require of us.
What is your total budget, can you tell us, for the next biennium?
Yes.
The accepted budget?
For the biennium, next biennium, 2001 to 2003, the total budget is $6,106,000 and a little bit more.
Representative Half.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When I read this the second time, I think that the phrase critical weakness may be an understatement, and I'm concerned about a couple of things. One is on the reporting issue, it reminds me a little bit like the teacher handing the third grader the report card with failing grades and saying, make sure you give this to your parents. And so I hope that's kind of a no-brainer for our committee, and whether it's the Charlie Ringo legislation or maybe a committee bill, that we can address this. But my concern is more in that the some of these issues, that it took an audit to prod your agency to come forward and address some of these things. And I just, wish the agency would have been more aggressive in whether it was seeking more funding to say, hey, look, we've got a problem here. We can't do the job. And the audit says, the agency simply did not follow the rules. I mean, there's no legislation we can really pass. I mean, the rules are, the law is the law, and if you're not following the rules or following the law, I don't know what we can do. And I just would like you to respond to this sort of inertia that may have led to some of these findings in your agency.
Madam Chair and Representative Haas, we certainly have been strapped for resources for the past number of years. I don't think that it would be fair or accurate to our staff or our agency to say that we have not been aware of those things or made them known. As the budget process proceeds, judgments have to be made in terms of the adequacy. The priority list that Chair Doug Wise indicated, the Drinking Water Advisory Committee sets and we follow, was one which was made with that knowledge. I think it's one of those things which we would say, yes, and I think most of the people, if they look at that, we are not doing all of the things that are requested of us. I don't think it's fair to say that we haven't let people know that, but I think in the budget process, priorities have been set. We have some concern with that. We believe that the decisions that have been made up to this point are reasonable. However, we are on very thin ice, and in the future, it's going to get worse. We agree with your basic assessment, but I don't think that it's probably fair to say that that has been unknown.
Representative King.
I think you probably heard when I had read my concern about the 102 surveys out of 746 and ask about the budget packages. I think I also just heard you say that as a good agency person, you're obligated to support the governor's budget. Are there any packages coming forward to give us the resources to, do the surveys in a timely manner and still deal with the lead copper priorities?
Madam Chair and Representative King, this past biennium, we have added nearly $1 million to county public health departments to better address this issue of the sanitary survey. So that's one that is underway right now. Yes, we can make available information as to what resources would be required for us to do the things that the audit points out that we're not doing. In essence, that comes down to about $550,000 in state match per biennium that will bring in another approximately $900,000 federal dollars. Is that package coming forward? No, that is not part of the governor's budget, but if that information is desired, we can indicate what that amount could be to maximize the available federal funding that is on the table for Oregon.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you. I asked a question of the auditors that I think should be asked of the department, and that is, do you find that the water systems that you have problems with on reporting and conforming to your requirements are the same water systems throughout the course or over time? What I'm trying to get at here, are there some systems that are constantly causing you problems, or is it kind of all over the board?
Madam Chair and Representative Morgan, that's a good question. The 20% rule applies here, too. Yes, about 80% of the problems of violations occur in 20% of the programs. That isn't to say that it's exclusive. That is, there are big water systems that have violations as well as little ones. It's probably true that there are more from smaller systems because they don't have as many resources as Representative Lee, I think, was indicating, to follow up on these things. And there is a capacity issue there, which I agree with her assessment. But certainly, yes, there are systems that generate more than their share of violations. And we do, within, again, the limits of our resources, try to direct them at those systems.
Let me have a follow-up. So in going through the audit, the recommendations seem to center around reporting requirements and what's the word that I want here? Enforcement. And that, so what I hear you saying is that if you've got 20% of the systems that are the problem, is that problem going to be solved by putting reporting requirements over the whole system?
Madam Chair and Representative Morgan, I think I see where you're going. It's solved, I think, best by individual working with those systems. There is a blend and a mix of technical assistance and encouragement and enforcement. That's always a difficult balance for agencies such as ours, regulatory agencies, to find. The audit, I think, seemed to suggest that we have been perhaps not as aggressive on our enforcement actions as those auditors would find appropriate. We have addressed that and looked at our internal procedures, and will continue to address that issue. I think, though, what you're suggesting is that we need to address our priorities in a way which tries to solve the problem with those systems which have the greater amount of problem. And that is a good approach, and that's really one which we follow with our existing set of priorities internally.
May I make one comment? The district that I represent is a rural district, and the towns in the district are small towns that have small water systems in them. And they do run into problems that are a result of capacity. They're a result of training, and they're a result of resources that are available within the towns to deal with problems that arise in the system. And I know that from the water systems that I have a knowledge of, that we would be a lot further along in solving water quality problems if the department continued to put resources into technical assistance and training rather than into reporting requirements and enforcement.
Madam Chair and Representative Morgan, we agree, and that is our philosophy as well.
Thank you.
Representative Lynn.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Did you request the governor to put $550,000 into your budget so that you could acquire that matching fund, or was that part of the budget given to the governor's office?
Madam Chair and Representative Lee, no, it was not. It didn't get that far. We have had discussions internally within our own program unit, but there are many levels of budget review, budget development, and it did not get to the governor's office.
I'd had a few more questions when I lost the podium. I would request that package come forward. if not to this committee, to me, and I certainly would like to see that gets before the Responsible Ways and Means Committee sub. I don't want to take any more money away from K through 12 or anybody else, but I think that it is a legislative mandate to at least take a look at that priority and see if, in our view, you know, that priority should have been able to carry forward. I'd also like to know, you know, what shape the review of individual, you know, water systems are. You know, the person who has a well on the acreage, if there are any problem areas there, is your agency responsible for doing that? In particular, an area like La Pine that has a lot of high-density wells, and we know that we've got some problems out in that area, and, you know, how is the oversight there occurring or not occurring?
Madam Chair, Representative King, no, our agency does not have regulatory oversight, at least, for individual well water systems. We start at 4 connections. The federal limit is 15. However, having said that, yes, we do source water protection and assessment kinds of studies. And certainly, as you indicate, in the La Pine area, there are problems with groundwater nitrates, so forth. We in the county public health departments, which have a drinking water program, do make available information to individual water systems, that is, wells that serve one or two or even three hookups and don't come under our regulatory authority of four or more. We are concerned about that and provide information if people request, but that's not something that we have a specific program for.
So how do we understand the carrying capacity of a small area so we can know what kind of density to allow?
Madam Chair, Representative King, that's the Water Resources Department that has the authority over giving permits for the extraction of water, and it's their authority to look at the capacity of the aquifer to sustain the amount that's being pulled out. That's not our authority.
But that's water quantity, not quality. Is that a true statement?
That's true. Mm-hmm. And we are encourage, Madam Chair and Representative King, individuals to have their water tested. It is a requirement that when property is sold, that a test be performed. And that test result is sent into our agency, which we maintain a record of, and if we see problems, we will refer to counties or others then that problem to help the individual. But we don't have a program for individual wells.
This one more. That would indicate then that you might have a density and you just keep selling property until the wells start showing up bad, and then nobody can go past that, I would suspect.
Madam Chair and Representative King, we, again, don't have any authority really in that area. We can indicate what the results are and compare that to the standards, but then that is the decision of the buyer and seller.
And finally, I would like to, I certainly encourage education and prevention rather than having to do enforcement, but once you got the citations, it looks like your agency is behind the curve on that. I'd certainly like to see other, you know, before Ways and Means, and I don't know if it's soon enough to be able to have had some turnaround in terms of your action on that, but if not, you know, this session, you know, I think that it's appropriate to be showing to the next session of the legislature that you are doing enforcement when people are not doing compliance.
Noted.
Representative Mona Sanders.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Just a brief question regarding septic systems and water systems. Do you have the authority to determine where septics lie? Who does that fall under? That also has, I think, a tremendous impact on especially well water, and I'm not sure how it can affect the water systems. But could you comment on the septic system piece?
Madam Chair and Representative Moses Anderson, the Department of Environmental Quality is the state agency that has authority over septic systems, on-site disposal systems. Yes, there is a connection between on-site disposal systems and groundwater quality. There are rules about how close those disposal systems can be placed to wells, so forth. That is, again, an environmental quality authority and issue. However, I think it would be appropriate to indicate that our agency and theirs work very closely with regard to source water protection. We have a program that we conduct some of, and we contract with the Department of Environmental Quality to do source water protection kinds of activities, source water assessments, to assure that the systems that we do regulate it, those of 15 connections and more, do have an adequate assessment to assure that they will be protected or reasonably protected from disposal systems that may be too close or may prove to be a problem. You're exactly right on. Source water protection is really where it starts. That is, our efforts really should be one of prevention and not trying to solve problems after they occur. We understand that, and we have made efforts to address that, and I think we are doing more of that in the last few years to try to protect the water and the source of that water and to try to deal with things after a problem occurs.
Thank you. Representative Lee? Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Does the PUC get reports from you where there are violations on small systems? I'm thinking that, if I recall correctly, that the PUC overlooks the rate-making abilities of the small systems, and I'm wondering if there's an ability in that process for the rates to be looked at to see if users are actually being charged enough to implement the systems properly.
Madam Chair and Representative Lee, at present there's only an informal process. I don't think that there's anything, and I'm turning to Dave Leland, the manager of the drinking water program, to see if that's true. I don't think there's any connection, direct connection, is there?
Well, the PUC also sits on our advisory.
For the record.
Excuse me. Come on up.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Dave Leland, and I'm the manager of the drinking water program at the Health Division. Madam Chair, Representative Lee, we do work really closely with the PUC on investor-owned small water systems, and they have some authority, actually quite a bit of authority over rate making and quality of service and those sorts of things. And we actually have them sitting on our advisory committee and work with them very closely, and have worked with them on some enforcement cases, in fact, where it was easier to are more direct to get into a solution working through PUC requirements even than ours. So we've had some real successful working relationships with PUC.
Thank you.
Are there further questions? Well, thank you so much, Mr. Johnson. I appreciate you being willing to take your time to be grilled by the committee here.
Well, it's our pleasure. You weren't too intimidating at all. And we'll follow through with these requests that you've made and get those back to you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, committee, we please hold on to your blue books because we are intending to work more on this issue, and it will be coming back. So we'll close the informational hearing on drinking water. And is there anything else for the committee? Any other announcements? If not, we are adjourned.